Good morning and welcome to Sports Interview with Anne Liguori on this Saturday morning, October 17th. Hope you're having a great weekend so far and glad you can join me where I am every Saturday morning from 7 to 8 right here on WLIW. You can hear us live online from anywhere by going to WLIW.org. Each show is archived on my website at AnneLiguori.com and distributed via podcasts. Well, this morning, we will explore two golf properties at the club at New Seabury on Cape Cod in Massachusetts. They offer two championship golf courses, two very different experiences indeed, the Dunes course and the Ocean course, and a whole lot more. And we're going to talk to Jim Clay, the director of golf. He will join us to talk about the two championship courses and what they have to offer here for residents and for visitors. And we'll also talk to executive chef Mark Pecoro, who creates a variety of delicious culinary offerings for the five restaurants on property. And in the second half of the show, we'll connect with foremost golf course landscape artist Linda Harto to hear about her process of painting some of the most iconic holes from some of the most prestigious courses in the world. Sports Interview with Anne Liguori is brought to you in part by Peak Vision Sunglasses, zero distortion, and patent dual-zone lens technology. Learn more at peakvision.com. That's peakvision.com. And by Dune Jewelry and my Hamptons Robe Collection. Savor the memories with sand from your favorite beach or golf course in timeless pieces for men and women. That's Dune Jewelry, D-U-N-E, jewelry.com. Welcome back to Sports Interview with Anne Liguori, and my guest is Jim Clay, director of golf for the club at New Seabury, right here on Cape Cod. Just a beautiful, beautiful spot, Jim. And the club at New Seabury, well, this is a premier private golf community offering everything and more, it seems, to residents and visitors. Two championship golf courses, full-service clubhouse, five restaurants, two beach clubs, a huge fitness facility with 16 tennis courts, a golf learning and performance center, all while enjoying just beautiful ocean views. It's a really unique part of the world.
Thanks, Anne. Yes, it is. New Seabury is a special place that our membership and guests come down here to escape from the city life, maybe. They come down to the Cape. You get great views of the Nantucket Sound, and it's just a peaceful place to come and spend your time.
We were talking about this a little earlier. It's such an interesting community as far as, you know, the homes kind of tucked behind gorgeous trees and in full foliage now. This is a great time of year to visit, obviously, October. But you can't tell how many houses are here because it's such an interesting master-planned community.
It is. And it's Massachusetts' first master-planned census community to where we have little pockets of neighborhoods that are all unique amongst themselves that make up this large property called New Seabury. So there's really something here for everybody, and everyone gets to pick their style of home.
So we're staying in Sea Quarters, a beautiful kind of two-story little cottage. But, you know, you drive around on the meandering roads amidst, you know, the forests and the beautiful scenery of the water, and there's some huge homes here.
There is. There's everything from, like you said, like the Sea Quarters townhomes that we have all the way to your 5,000, 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 square foot homes right along the water. Just beautiful setting that some of these homes have.
So who is here, Jim? Are they Bostonians? Are they people who come just for the summer and aren't here for the winter? Are they year round? Who actually is here?
We have everybody, quite honestly. We have a lot of folks that go between Florida and Cape Cod. You know, the retirees go between both areas. We have a lot of Boston folks that come down, and this is where they spend their summers for 3 months, as well as New York and Connecticut. And then we have folks that literally will have a home in Vermont and a home here, and they go back and forth as well. So it's pretty much New England and Florida.
Yeah, and I noticed a lot, and I heard a lot of people saying how they're going to Florida next weekend. So, my goodness, this place might not be It really wasn't crowded this week at all. It was a good time to be here. But by about now is when I guess a lot of your seasonal residents may head south. And then what is it like here?
Yeah, a good portion of our membership will head south or head north, for that matter, back to Boston. Maybe a little different this year, where most folks during COVID have moved down to the Cape and they've stayed here versus the city. But we stay open year-round. We keep our golf courses open. The Dunes course is open year-round. The restaurant is open. So we still have a decent crowd here that spends their time in the winter.
Well, we were very, very lucky. I think we had two perfect 10 days to play not only the Dunes course, but the Ocean course. So the club at New Seabury offers two championship golf courses, two very different golf experiences.
They are. Believe it or not, they're both designed by the same person, and they've both been redesigned by the same person, and Bruce Heppner, who's done a wonderful job in keeping the uniqueness of each golf course, but enhancing the special aspects of the interior course with being through the trees, and then the Ocean course, bringing that seaside feel to it.
So let's first talk about the Ocean course. It first opened in 1962, designed by William Mitchell, recently, as you mentioned, renovated by Bruce Heppner, and really beautiful. The front nine, you have the views of Nantucket Sound, Martha's Vineyard, that first hole. It was a par five, correct? It starts from the clubhouse, and you see the water, and that green kind of overlooks the Nantucket Sound. And then that second hole, the par four, right along the coastline. Describe the front nine for us.
Sure. As you mentioned, yeah, it's special. You tee off on that first hole, and you're just waiting to get out to the water there. So you finish that first hole. You see it, second tee, you're right on the beach. You're hitting out, traveling down that beachfront on the second and third hole. And then when you get to the fourth hole, you're actually surrounded by water on both sides with our interior pond, ocean on the other side. It's just spectacular. It's peaceful. There's quite honestly no better place to be than out there on the second, third, and fourth hole.
Really amazing. And you get the breeze, sometimes a strong wind off the ocean, and you breathe in that beautiful ocean air. And so that the first, I'd say, well, all the front nine, really, you can see views of the water.
You can. And as you mentioned, the breeze, right? So what that brings you a different golf course every day. You never know what you're going to experience when you get out there. The second and third holes can play very short, or they can play extremely long into a gust. So it's a unique property and a beautiful setting on that front nine.
And the number one handicap hole, talk about number three.
Number three, long par four. Mr. Heppner did a great job of putting in some new bunkers on the right-hand side to shelter the hole from the fourth hole, but also to make you really focus in on hitting a quality, accurate shot into the fairway. From there, most times you're going to be into the wind, hitting a mid to long iron into that third green that pitches severely from back to front, making a difficult birdie putt for you.
And I love the par three fourth hole.
Yeah, fourth hole, as we mentioned, water on both sides of you as you're teeing off. And a large body of water you got to carry to get to the green that you're hitting, and it borders the hole bound entirely on the left-hand side.
So it's really like a tale of two different golf courses. You kind of have the front nine. It's kind of links-like, would you say? And then the back nine meanders through the woodlands, and totally different, much hillier, two different golf courses almost between the front and the back.
They are. As you mentioned, the front side is more straight away. You're dealing with the elements. You turn to the back, and there's a lot of dog legs. You got to move the golf ball a lot more out there. And the trees are bordering the holes versus the ocean. As you move through it, it starts right there with that 10th hole. That 10th hole is a sharp dog leg par five, moves down into a valley, and then back up to the green. It takes three quality shots to have a shot at birdie there.
And then the toughest hole on the back, the second handicap hole, is number 15, right? Another par five.
Another par five, yes, where you're carrying over water off the tee shot. Then you've got to, for your layup shot, you got to work between a body of water on your right-hand side and the homes and trees that come into play on the left-hand side. So the layup shot there is probably the most difficult shot that there is in that hole.
It's really a complete golf experience. It will test every part of your game, right?
It will, yes. As you mentioned, there's elevation change on that backside, and on the front side, you're dealing with the different elements. So it tests all aspects of your game, from hitting a long ball to hitting the short putts.
So talk a little bit about the renovation, the recent renovation, Jim, because I know, you know, both courses were recently renovated. How different is the Ocean Course now with its recent renovations?
The Ocean Course, full bunker renovation. We did change four of the greens out there, including their complexes. But the primary difference is the bunkers and the fescue and the native seaside areas that Bruce brought into the front nine that separate the holes that make you hit these accurate tee shots, where before maybe there was a little more forgiving in the past.
So let's talk about the Dunes course. That was recently renovated as well. I understand 79 bunkers were redesigned on 125 acres. It sits inland, meanders through wetlands and woods. Now, I just thought that the Dunes course was shorter, obviously a lot shorter, and it's very playable for all ability levels.
It is. It's a shorter golf course, kind of reminds you of an old Donald Ross course. It's kind of Bruce's feel to it, and he did a great job with that. It's very tight. You got to hit accurate shots. But as you mentioned, it's very playable, so it's great for our junior programs, our ladies programs, and people to kind of get into the game of golf. That's where we start them. Then you move to the more difficult Ocean course.
Yeah, it was a good course to warm up. Not easy by any means. A lot of times, oh, it's shorter. Oh, okay, this should be a piece of cake. No, because it's all about the short game and making the putts. And I really think, you know, a lot of the greens have, you know, a lot of slopes. And they didn't break as severe as you would have thought, but they were still tricky.
They are. And as you mentioned, it is shorter, but we have professional tournaments here. More times than not, the scores relative to par are exactly the same on both golf courses because of those. They're small, undulating greens that you don't think you're going to have to play a lot of break, but it ends up moving quite a bit on you. So it makes it challenging for all levels.
Yeah, I'm sure the more you play it, the more you know, can kind of figure out the nuances of the greens, because you really have to be a good reader of the slopes. A lot of those holes were on slopes.
Yes, as you mentioned, with the heading into the hills, the topography really lended to some great green complexes that Bruce and his team were able to tie in bunkers and give us some great hole locations out there to make an easy or a very difficult golf course.
So just because I'm looking at the Dunes scorecard here, just because, let's say, from the blues, the total yardage is 5,626, from the blacks, 6,041, doesn't mean that it's not challenging.
No, that's right. As I mentioned, we had a professional tournament here not too long ago, and from the blacks on each side, both courses played the same level over par. So as I mentioned, it's challenging for all levels, and it can drive you a little bit crazy out there because it's so tight. You want to hit the driver on some of these short holes, but sometimes you're better off hitting that shorter iron just to play for birdie.
That's right. That's what Scott did. He used, off the tee, he rarely used driver. And, you know, you got to hit it straight down the middle and then know how to really read the greens. So now you recently had an outing here with New England PGA, right?
We did, yes. This week we had the New England PGA Pro-Am. It was a great event. We had 27 teams out here from all over New England, one pro with three amps. We had a terrific day to play, and they really enjoyed the golf course.
So who won?
I was fortunate enough to pull off the victory. I tied a couple guys, yeah.
Oh, Jim, you won your own tournament. I love it. Well, I think that's inside information.
Yeah, I got to represent it in my home course, so it was great. We had a great team. We had a lot of fun out there.
The New Seabury Golf Learning and Performance Center sits on 12 acres, and you were talking about you have a pro who was from originally the Doral and then Huntington. Talk a little bit about the Learning Center and what you offer golfers here.
Sure, yes. Jimmy Damiano is our director of instruction. He's done an amazing job here at the club. He's busy from sun up to sundown, and rightfully so. He was awarded the Cape Cod Teacher of the Year last year. So he's done an amazing job with implementing technology into our instruction program, using TrackMan, using Titleist Performance Institute, training with our fitness instructor, bringing in programs that help you not only improve your game, but they're going to improve your health, keep you on the golf course longer.
So it sounds great. Now, it's not right here at this spot. Where is the Learning Center?
Sure. The Learning Center is about a mile and a half from the clubhouse. So unique to New Seabury is our driving range, short game facility are all out there. What makes it nice is we have a building out there. That's where Jimmy stays. It's a nice place where you can go and escape from the the chaos that ensues around the clubhouse with the carts and everything. You just go out there and really focus in on your game.
And I guess you have a lot of participation, junior clinics, lessons year-round?
We do, yeah. And this year we're adding a simulator into the clubhouse here so we can really work on everyone's game who's going to be here in town. Junior program was great this year. We had a big improvement. We quadrupled our junior program year over year. So the kids are really into it. They take use of that Dunes course with some great play days and competitions that we have out there for them.
Yeah, there's really been a golf resurgence, Jim, during this whole COVID pandemic. And in a very kind of ironic twist, golf has flourished. I think people realize the social distancing aspects of this great sport. You know, parents want to get their children out there to learn. A lot of the camps were closed, but golf camps were flourishing with a lot of participation. What are your thoughts about the state of golf right now?
I'm excited about the state of golf right now. As you mentioned, it was really a big boost in play. We were up 30% in our rounds here this year, and it's not that we had more guests. It was really more member play. Members were taking more advantage of the club. They were getting into their games. They were taking more lessons. I think golf's in a great space right now where we have an opportunity to grab these new golfers and to hook them into the game that we all love.
Do you think we can sustain those players?
Absolutely. Sure we can. And I think everyone's starting to see how great this game can be. No matter what's going on in the outside world, you can go escape on the golf course and be safe, but also enjoy yourself and enjoy your family and your friends.
Certainly with these surroundings here, no complaints whatsoever. It's just such a beautiful part of the world, and it's inspiring. When you play, particularly the ocean course, that front nine, and the back nine too with the woodlands, it's a very inspirational place to play golf, don't you think?
It is. You know, when I first moved to the Cape and I moved to the club here, I'd go out and walk the front nine after a long day, and there was no better place to stand on the third green just surrounded by water. And like you said, it really is a peaceful place where you can just go escape and be in tune with what's going on out there on the course.
So you've been here for 2.5 years. Your background is varied. I know you were in the desert in California for a while, right, at Rancho La Quinta Country Club. And assistant pro years before that at Mission Hills, I read, right? LinkedIn. So talk about a contrast between desert golf and the golf here. What's that contrast like for you?
Whole different world. You know, the desert was, as the pros would say when they're there, it was playing in a bubble. It's perfect conditions, no wind, 75 and sunny. To move into the ocean course, which it's typically we have about a 20-mile-an-hour wind, and the elements, you never know what you're going to expect. So it's been a real treat to see another area of the world. I'm from this area. I'd never played New Sebring before coming here, but it's great to be back on the East Coast.
Awesome. So you're originally from here, and will you be here year-round?
I'm here year-round, yes. And like I said, we're moving in a simulator. We're hoping to help some people's games, but also maybe play a few rounds on the simulator with the folks that are going to be here. We do have a number of members who go out and play all winter long. Like I mentioned, even when the ground's frozen, they're out there playing. So,
wow, that would be interesting on the frozen tundra, right? So do you get a lot of snow on the Cape or no? Is it more moderate because of the ocean?
Yeah, not a lot of snow here. They'll receive most of the snow on the other side of the bridge. So literally, we have people who will go out and play January, February, March. As long as there's no snow on the ground, they'll play.
So I would be remiss if I didn't mention the two meals that we enjoyed here at the Club at New Seabury. There are 5 restaurants here, but our first night, we were at the Papaneset Inn. I hope I pronounced that perfectly. But what an iconic spot, really overlooking the ocean. There's a beach club there as well. And then there's a restaurant here in the clubhouse. The meals were really creative and really delicious. I was very, very impressed with the variety on the menu and how good everything was.
Yes, we have an amazing chef, Mark Picaro. He does tremendous work. As you mentioned, we have 5 restaurants, so that gives him the ability to spread his knowledge across all of them, where we have different menus at each restaurant, different feel at each restaurant, really, from the Lure to the Poppy to 95 Shore, where you're going from beach bar to maybe that Cape clam house feel to it. to now the high-end dining experience we have here at 95 Shore.
So really, the person who lives here or visits here really has a complete experience.
They do. Yes, you get it all. You get the beach. You have the golf, pools, fitness, learning center, anything that you're looking to do as far as this country club setting and activities, the trails throughout the property, go for nice walks. It's all inclusive. You don't have to leave the gates as soon as you come in.
Well, it's a pleasure to meet you, Jim. Thanks so much for joining us, and continued success. It's really a special place.
Thank you, Ann. Thanks for visiting us. We hope you enjoyed your time.
Jim Clay, Director of Golf, the club at New Seabury. Welcome back to Sports Interview with Ann Liguori, and it is my pleasure to talk to the executive chef here at the club at New Seabury on Cape Cod, Chef Mark Porcaro. Chef, thanks so much for joining us.
No problem. Thanks. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, one of the real delights visiting here at the club at New Seabury have been the food offerings. There are 5 restaurants here. And the first night we were staying here, we ate at the Poppy. And then the second night, we ate at 95 Shore. And I was raving to the director of golf, Jim Clay, that I just thought the variety on the menu was exceptional. And everything, I kind of tasted a lot because I'm a foodie. And everything was really, really well done.
Oh, great. That's what I like to hear. It's good news. Well, we have a variety of options here, as a lot of the members come out to eat a lot. So you want to make sure there's a variety and there's a, so they don't get bored of coming and having the same dish every night. So we try to mix it up at all our locations, and living on the Cape with fresh seafood and just the variety of items we can get here is just wonderful.
Well, the first evening, as I say, we ate at what's called the Poppy. Talk a little bit about that iconic spot.
The Poppy's been around for a while, and we have a lot of classic dishes down there. Cape Fear, lobster rolls are our top sellers. Our sole franchise, scallops, stuffed quahogs is pretty much a classic on the Cape. Items that you expect to get when you come down to the Cape, fried clams, fried fish and chips, just local ingredients, fresh swordfish, tuna, just a variety of items you can get. A lot of those are staples down at the Poppy, which is great. People always come back and have the same items, so it's just a good opportunity to express what we have to offer at the Poppy.
And how much fun it must be to be a chef with all, surrounded by water, and to be able to use, the local fish.
Yeah, it's never a dull moment, that's for sure, having 5 outlets to go through every day and make sure everyone's happy and have a variety of items that people want.
So I had the filet of sole prepared in Parmesan egg batter in a lemon butter sauce, and Scott had a delicious swordfish cooked to perfection on a bed of eggplant carbonara.
Yeah, we change these things seasonally down at the Poppy. A lot of items are mainstay, but the swordfish comes in every day. It's line caught. The sole franchise has been on the menu for as long as I can remember, and that's just pretty much a staple with the Papanessa Inn.
And then at 95 Shore, which is actually located in this sprawling clubhouse here at the club at New Seabury, the lobster gnocchi was just fabulous.
Yeah, we just went through a renovation last year, new dining room, new kitchen, extensive deck, gazebo, which is beautiful. So we change the menu pretty periodically every few weeks. We keep some staples on there, but with the bountiful seafood, it's hard to keep some things on. We just keep on changing it and changing as the season goes on.
What was really interesting was the burrata salad that you did with, you paired it with honey poached pear, and I just thought the contrast in taste with the burrata cheese and the pear was exquisite.
Yeah, I poached the pears and honey, and agave, some allspice, some cinnamon, and fresh Tahitian vanilla bean. Sorry about that. And we save the liquid. Actually, the bar uses that for their pure martinis. And we do use some of the liquids with some extra virgin olive oil that pairs well with the cheese and the poached pear and some balsamic, aged balsamic, and crispy prosciutto, which enhances the cheese, the flavor, and, you know, a little bread on the side to sop up all the sauces, the best way to eat it.
Now, did you create that, or how do you come up with these kinds of signature dishes?
Well, pears are in season now, so, you know, we do apple compote in our squash soup, and we do pears with, you know, with our salads and with the burrata. I figured this time of year would be perfect for that.
I love autumn menus, and I love to see how executive chefs such as yourself come up with creative ways to kind of bring in all kind of, you know, the autumn types of foods, fruits and vegetables. And that cauliflower, the Kung Pao cauliflower, was delicious. Can you explain that one?
Yeah, that's pretty much a staple that will stay on forever. I can't take that off. It's fried in rice flour and a lot of Asian ingredients. I lived in Hawaii for a while, so I brought some of that back to the table here. It's a spicy hoisin, sweet chili plum sauce that gets tossed with the cauliflower, which is crispy, served with peanuts and scallions and micro cilantro. It's a pretty popular dish.
I was going to say, and you know, you can really order a couple of those appetizers and be full without going to an entree, right? Because, you know, the sizes are hearty and filling.
Yeah, there's... portions are not too small here. We a lot of the appetizers are shareables, so if you're sitting with two people or four people, it's great to have a few options. That way you're not, you know, you have a lot to choose from, and it just makes it for a fun evening.
So, Chef Mark, talk about your background. I'm interested in the variety that you present to the menu, and I get this feeling that it's come from a varied background in the culinary arts.
Well, this is my first club experience. I've been here 4 years. University was just a few weeks ago. So club life is a little different. I've always worked in restaurants my whole life and hotels. I lived on Lanai City, Hawaii for 2 years, worked out there for a while, worked at Top of the Hub in Boston for a long time. So I've met a lot of chefs on the way and a lot of cultures, and I bring that here with my food and my experience. And it's just a fun place to work, and it's just great, just a great place and good team, and just gives me the opportunity to do what I can do here.
Can you talk about the differences, perhaps, of being at a golf property like New City Brewery?
Well, we have a lot more repeat customers here than a restaurant would, so we kind of have to keep on the ball and make sure everything's fresh, make sure there's a variety, make sure we touch all the tables, make sure everyone's happy, and just an overall great experience, which, you know, restaurants are, you know, a little bit different. We different revolving door, people just coming and going. So it is a little different than the restaurant business. But you get to meet a lot of people, and you get to know them, what they like, what their dislikes are, which is great for me because I pretty much know what everyone likes and what they don't like. Not everybody, but I try.
And they'll tell you what they like and dislike, correct? Very discerning clientele.
Yeah, definitely. They'll let you know if they don't like something, which is good because good feedback and bad feedback is always great.
Of all the restaurants that you and your team prepare the menus for, what's your favorite?
In the building? Well, my main position here is at the club, and with the new renovation and the new dining room, it gives you a lot of inspiration compared to what it was before. It was just a dull restaurant. Now it's alive and vibrant and just a great place to work.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about a huge clubhouse. I think I read it was 45,000 square feet. So you have a lot to work with, gorgeous views that are very inspirational, I would think, as you prepare the menus and the food each day. And as you say, people coming and going, regulars who come, visitors who come and stay, you know, to play the two championship golf courses. So you have an interesting clientele as well.
Yes, I have a good view. Golf course is right in front of me. Great, beautiful ocean. Just a great place to work. I can just look out the window, go outside, take a breath, and then come back in, which is Most restaurants, you're stuck in the restaurant all day. So, yeah, it's a great opportunity.
That's an interesting point. Yeah, it's a very inspirational, gorgeous view. And you have to feel good about, you know, where you're working and the restaurant itself and the kitchen. So I would assume that is a plus mark on your list.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely a plus. I was usually stuck in a building in the 52nd floor in Boston, which I had a good view there, too, but the view here is much better.
Are you a golfer by any chance?
Actually, I do not golf. I like to go fishing and clamming, and no golf for me. I would probably get fired because I would tear up the greens, so it's not very good.
But at least you can be inspired by the view. Talk a little bit about, you know, what kind of seafood are in the waters here around Cape Cod. There seem to be a little bit of everything. And are the lobsters, do they come from here?
Lobsters are from here. Swordfish is caught right off of George's Bank. Striped bass is seasonal. We usually get that in the summer. Cod, obviously cod and haddock and hake and, you know, all the local fish, Jonah crab and all that we can get from the local waters.
That's really cool. And how would it differ, this experience here on the East Coast, from your experience? And did you say Lanai?
Yeah.
In Hawaii. I've been to Lanai years ago. There were two hotels there.
Manali, exactly.
Manali and then the lodge. What was
Kauai.
At Kauai? Were you at either of those?
I was at Manali Bay, and actually I worked at the lodge as well.
Right.
They were two separate secluded resorts. One was up in the mountains, and one was down on the ocean. So it was another place where there's a lot of variety, two great golf courses, and just beautiful food, and just beautiful place to work.
And how would the seafood differ from those waters in the Pacific Ocean to what you get here?
Well, in Hawaii, you get a lot of the tuna, fresh tuna. The fish out there is just amazing as well. So I'm pretty lucky to be living on two places with great product and great produce, great fish. Just a great opportunity to experience everything.
Right. Talk about two different experiences from Lanai, this gorgeous Hawaiian island, to Cape Cod. You know, I guess the one mainstay is, you know, the water, the views are spectacular, and the variation in the dishes that you can prepare.
Yes, Hawaii's like, you know, the weather there is always nice. You want something light. Seafood was very big out there. A lot of sashimi and sushi and just like I said, great product, great produce. You just want to make sure everything's nice and serving the guests the best quality that you can.
And are you here year-round? I mean, in the wintertime, will you be here supervising the menus and doing what you do?
In the winter, we are open all year seasonally, and we will be working on the menus in the winter when it slows down a little bit in December and January for the next upcoming season.
Awesome. Any new plans for 2021?
I have a lot of plans in the works, but we're just waiting to see, you know, what pans out. Hopefully some new equipment that was needed. But other than that, just looking forward to next year.
And what's your favorite dish of everything that you prepare?
Well, that's a tough question. I think everything is. You know, I take a lot of pride in what I do, and a lot of effort goes into every dish we put out. So I would say everything. I don't really have a favorite dish.
It's like picking a kid, right?
One day it could be something. The other day it could be something else. I guess it's whatever we come up with. And the feedback we get from our members is pretty much, you know, that makes the call.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Chef Mark Beccaro, here at the Club at New Seabury. Really enjoyed my visit here, and continued success.
Thank you. It was nice to meet you. Thanks again.
Thank you. Sports Interview with Anne Liguori is brought to you in part by Peak Vision Sunglasses, Zero Distortion, and patent Dual Zone Lens Technology. Learn more at peakvision.com. That's peakvision.com. And by Dune Jewelry and my Hamptons Robe Collection. Savor the memories with sand from your favorite beach or golf course in timeless pieces for men and women. That's Dune Jewelry, D-U-N-E, jewelry.com. Welcome back to Sports Interview with Anne Liguori, and my guest is world-renowned golf landscape artist, Linda Harto. Linda, you painted
some of the most memorable and beautiful holes at some of the most prestigious golf courses in the world. What a career you've had. Your work is displayed in the permanent collections of such legendary clubs as Augusta National, Laurel Valley, Pinehurst, Pine Valley, and personalities such as Jack Nicklaus, Raymond Floyd, Reese Jones, just to name a few, actually have many of your paintings in their own collections, as do the USGA Museum, the Morris Museum of Art in Augusta, Georgia. I could go on and on, but I'm honored to have you on Sports Interview. Thanks so much for joining us.
Well, it's an honor to be here as well. It has been a wonderful career. I have to, well, still is, but it's been over, well, about 36 years now that I've been doing almost exclusively golf courses. So
let's go back. How did you get started in painting? I understand you were an artist as a child.
Yeah, I think it's been my focus my whole life, literally realizing it at the age of 6 when I was already doing lots of artwork and people would remark on it, and I suddenly realized that not everybody could do that. So it sort of defined me then, and I pretty much stuck to that my whole life.
And you know, where did you grow up, Linda?
Well, I was born in New Jersey. We moved to Delaware, Wilmington, Delaware, then Louisville, Kentucky. And then I went to the Art Institute of Chicago and stayed there for a while, and then I came down here. So.
And you down here is Spring Island, which is a private island off of Hilton Head, South Carolina.
Right.
Is that a great spot to paint?
Yes, it's gorgeous. You know, I have there's a lot of nature preserve on Spring Island, and that's all I look out on is trees, and it's like a sanctuary to me. So I'm very happy here.
So how did you become so connected to golf?
Well, it happened in the early 80s. I was exhibiting my work in a gallery on Hilton Head, the Red Piano Gallery. And I think it was Frank Christian. Do you remember Frank Christian Jr.? He was the photographer at Augusta National then.
Oh, right. Yes.
And he saw my work. And I guess both the pros there, Dave Spencer especially, was looking for artists to paint some holes at Augusta. And he recommended me. And so, yeah, we started a relationship in 1984 with Augusta.
Wow. It doesn't get any better than that.
No, it really doesn't hurt to start at the top.
I mean, where do you go from there?
Well, I've thought in retrospect many times that I did a lot of commission work then, you know, anyway. So it was not anything unusual for me to do this. But in retrospect, I think had it been any other course, it probably would have been one and done.
Interesting.
Yeah, because from that one first commission, I started getting commissions from other golf clubs almost immediately.
Right.
And by 1988, only 4 years later, I was doing nothing but golf. And in 1990, I started my U.S. Open Series and also the Open Championship Series.
Were you a golfer?
No. My father was an avid golfer. When we were in Louisville, you know, we used the club, Big Spring Golf Club. And I would go there, and I did take lessons, and I played some when I was young, but it really didn't stick.
So you don't really play, but you feel obviously.
No, I'm an avid. I call myself an avid watcher.
Right. Well, you have to be to paint these incredible, you know, golf landscapes.
Yes, I really love the game. I love every aspect of it. I follow every bit of it. And the history, the traditions. And I try to, you know, show that in my paintings too, that
sure.
perspective.
It comes out in 1984, so Augusta National Golf Club commissioned you to paint their famous 13th hole.
That's right.
And gosh, just what was it like that very first one when you went to Augusta National? What do you remember?
Well, it was pretty overwhelming as a landscape. What I actually painted the painting, I had to kind of rethink grass a little bit because I had been painting a lot of landscape, and of course, there isn't another landscape much in the world that has the contours like you see on a green or a fairway. So I had to kind of rethink that. You couldn't show much texture, you know, it's just completely different. But once I got over that, it was okay. And then I kind of liked the differences. I like to be able to see the ground contour. You don't get to see the ground contour everywhere in landscape. You know, every little roll and nuance and how the light hits it. That just doesn't happen much in most nature, so...
Right, and your paintings certainly do bring out that texture, that
mm-hmm.
rich texture and the contours that you're talking about.
Yeah. I find it really fascinating to see the way the light goes over the contours of the green and fairway, and it's really interesting.
Yeah, so take us back, because I think it's fascinating. When you went to Augusta National, do you take photographs, or what's the process like? What happened then, that very first?
Yeah, I took photographs, and also Frank Christian, loaded me with photographs. But but I have always taken my own photographic reference for every painting I've ever done, really, since about the
mm-hmm.
60s, I guess. And so that's just part of what I do. I use the camera to get the information I need, basically.
Right. So you're not actually physically sitting at Augusta National painting while you're looking at the 13th hole, or are you?
No. I don't.
Right.
I don't work that way.
Right.
I've tried doing drawings before, but really, it's mostly I've learned how to use the camera to get all my reference material. So.
Right. So you bring these photographs back to your studio, and you paint from your studio on Spring Island?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I see. Because it looks like, I can just picture you, when you think of artists, whether, landscape artists or portrait artists, you think of the person being, like, right there, and Van Gogh out in the fields.
Well, I don't paint really fast, for one thing.
Right.
And another thing is you can't be in play. Most all the courses I go to people are actually playing.
Sure.
So you have
to sort of...
You
couldn't be there. You'd be dodging golf balls, right?
Exactly.
But
it doesn't work really well.
It wouldn't be a bad office for sure if you had to sit there for days to do this painting. But so how long does it take from start to finish to complete one of your landscape paintings?
Depending on the size, of course, but most average at least 3 months, sometimes
mm-hmm.
four, sometimes six. And then there's all the production that follows after that. It goes to the printer or the digital capture and then proofing the prints. And so the whole process, that can add an extra month at least to the process.
Right.
So if I get
right.
three or four done a year, I'm doing good.
Wow. Okay. Well, yeah, that's a lot. Three or
mm-hmm.
four a year based on all the time that goes into it, as you say, the process, that's a lot. So for instance, you were so kind to donate a replica of your painting of the famous 13th hole at Augusta National, for our Anne LaGorrie Foundation Charity Golf Classic, which I'm getting framed and which we will auction off.
Great.
So tell us about that. So is that, it looks like it's the actual authentic oil painting. It's just so real. But what actually is it?
It's a canvas G-clay print. Most all the printing I'm doing now is canvas, on canvas. And it really right. replicates the original. The person that does my digital captures, he's somewhat of a genius, I think.
Yeah.
And he has been able, I've been working with him since, oh gosh, 1994, I guess. And he's able to do the digital capture to not only capture the texture of the paint, which comes through when you print it on canvas, you actually feel like you can touch the texture.
Right. Yeah, and definitely notice the difference.
Yeah, he's just amazing how he can capture that.
Because it looks like the original oil. It looks like the original mm-hmm. painting. It's uncanny. So now does Augusta National got your original. Is that correct?
Yes, they did. Yes.
And then from that painting and all the other ones you've done, how many holes have you painted at Augusta National?
Well, let's see. About nine different holes, but probably about 30-some paintings overall, because I did a lot of paintings of the same holes.
Right.
Because
they're
commercially, you know, as far as selling prints, you know, people want the main ones.
Right.
I did the fourth, the sixth, and the eighth holes, but they were done as a master's gift. Jack Stevens had started that. So I did that for 3 years. And that was really the only time I got to paint anything from the front nine. Mm-hmm. All the other paintings have been on the back nine.
What a lovely gift. And now you're saying that all the prints are on this canvas G clay?
Mostly. I still do paper prints, but mostly everything is on canvas. And everyone seems to like that.
Oh, it looks so authentic.
Yeah, it's just a different look from a paper print because you have to put glass over it and mats and all that kind of stuff. So.
Right. Now, on your website, you have a gorgeous painting that you did of the ninth hole, the ninth green at Wingfoot, who hosted the 2020 U.S. Open, and the beautiful clubhouse behind it. The texture and the rich colors come out so beautifully. Talk about that painting, Linda, and when did you start that, and how did that go?
I actually did that painting for the 2006 U.S. Open.
Okay.
And it still pretty much looks like that. I noticed they took out a few more trees.
Right.
Actually, they took out a lot of trees over that course since I was there.
Yeah, that's been the trend.
Yeah, but it still pretty much looks the same. Fortunately.
And how do you decide on the lighting? Is it from pictures that you take, or do you decide, I'm going to make it look, you know, this way from a lighting perspective, or is that strictly from photographs?
No, that's mainly when I go to the course, I look at it in all the different lights and decide which ones I like. It's usually a morning or an afternoon lighting.
Right. My guest is world-renowned golf landscape artist Linda Harto, who just is so talented, and you're so accomplished at what you do. And as you say, you continually work. You know, you do work for the USGA. I got the National Open Championship. What have been some of your most memorable paintings to you personally?
Oh, wow. Well, the ones at Augusta, of course. But I really love the Scottish courses. It's been quite an experience. I used to go over there every year. And I just grew to love the look of those courses so much.
The Lynx courses, yeah.
Yeah, just the way, you know, the combination of the natural landscape and I just love the way it looks over there. It's just so natural.
Very natural. I love playing Lynx courses. My favorite golf destination is Ireland and Scotland for sure. And it's because of those Lynx courses, the beauty and the natural terrain and the everything that's, you know, that comes with that. It is just so inspiring to me. I play my best golf on those links courses because I think I'm just so inspired by the scenery.
Well, you know, it's not just that either. I think you get a real sense of history there. I mean, it's like ghosts, you know.
Right.
You really don't get that over here. But over there, I became aware of it almost immediately, and it really changed the whole way I approached, I think, the whole idea of painting golf landscape.
In what way? I know you have such a deep respect for the game's history and tradition.
I think it was sort of like tuning into the metaphysical side of golf.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow you become aware of that over there.
You're absolutely right.
Tangible.
Yeah. Yeah, the tradition of golf and the history and just you feel it there, right? As you said.
Yeah, you really do. It's tangible. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and how do you capture that in your work?
You know, I don't know how to explain it, but when I went to Scotland and my agent then, which was Bob Pringle, he took me all over Scotland, showed me all kinds of things, and we even salmon fished and everything.
Fun.
And then he took me to St. Andrews and just left me there. He put me in a bed and breakfast and just said, I'll see you in a week.
Wow, interesting.
Yeah, this was, you know, my first trip to Scotland, right? And so I was, there I was. I had nothing to do but wander all over St. Andrews and the course and the town.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, you know, it just did something to me, I think.
Right.
It was just, you were immersed in it there. And
right. Yeah, it's very spiritual. You walk through the town and the cemetery and you see, the gravesite of all these incredible golf course designers and just very spiritualized.
Yeah, very special. And after that, I was putting actual people in the paintings. And after that, I didn't ever again. I never have put people in the painting. It was like, because when you put them in there, it becomes a narrative rather than a feeling.
I see.
So I was trying to really zone you into the feeling of being there.
Right.
And other things that would distract that feeling just didn't get put in. So,
well,
pretty
thank
much.
You so much for joining me, Linda. It's a pleasure to talk to you. I look forward to seeing you at a upcoming golf event or, you know, function. We run into each other.
That would be nice.
Occasionally every year. And continued success. I really appreciate you coming on the show.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate your having me on your wonderful show, for sure.
Thanks so much. Renowned golf landscape artist, Linda Harto.
My thanks to Jim Clay, the director of golf at the club at New Seabury. My thanks to their executive chef, Mark Beccaro. My thanks to golf course landscape artist Linda Harto and to studio engineer Kyle Lynch. Have a wonderful weekend, everybody. Be safe, stay well, and I'll talk to you next Saturday morning from 7 to 8 right here on Sports Interview with Ann LaGorrie.